The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com.
And hello again, wrestling fans. Welcome to another edition of This Week in History. We are taking a second shot at this. I was recording a moment ago, or actually didn't even hit record, but we had some audio issues. Those have apparently been fixed. Jonesy gave me the thumbs up that we're good. But we want to thank you for joining us on Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere else you get your podcasts from, Rumble, YouTube, and Facebook. If you're watching us visually, we appreciate you joining us. We are also available anytime on Facebook, Messenger, emailing us at scumbagsofwrestling@gmail.com or going over to our website, scumbagswrestling.ca. Now, we want to thank all of our sponsors, which included Cool Bet and Johnner's Podcasting Network, but we also got Hammerlock Pure Wrestling, bringing back the golden age of pro wrestling this Saturday, May 14th, in Elmer, Ontario, at the Saxonia Hall. Tickets are just $20. You're going to get some great wrestling action. Doors open at 6 p.m., bell time at 7. And it's brought to you by our friends over at Domino's Pizza, the Rusty Wrench, and Hammerlock Apparel. Go to hammerlockapparel.com for your tickets and all your Hammerlock Apparel needs. We hope to see you this Saturday as we put on a great show, and I get to make my in-ring debut as the ring announcer. So a little bit scary in a way. I've been doing the music and the ring bell, but come on out and join us anywhere in Ontario. It's not a far drive to get to Elmer, Ontario. So please join us May 14th for a great show. But this is the show for This Week in History. We're talking history, the past, but we can't do that until we go over to Niagara Falls. And welcome in Jonesy. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty darn fantastic.
Yes, and thank you for letting me know we were not sounding so great earlier, but we seem to be back up and running and recording this time. So, yeah, it's a wonderful evening when we're recording this on a Thursday night. It's been great weather here in Ontario, even summer-like weather at the moment. Hopefully, we get more of it as time goes on and we don't revert back to winter. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to this list. We have a double shot of Canadian in the spotlight, including Owen Hart and Bobby Roode, and so much more to look at. And we can't do that until we start off with our headlines.
All righty. 33 years ago, May 6, 1989, famed Yoshichiro Saga Negito retires on her 26th birthday due to Japanese regulation at the time. This rule of retiring would be lifted and Nagoyo would return to the ring in 95 and former GAEA champion. Japan, yikes. Her retirement match was with her WWWA tag partner and current tag champs, the Crush Girls, the Lioness Asuka. And of course, that was occurring a year ago, so I don't know about now. 16 years ago, May 6, 2006, WWE hires Dylan Post, aka Hornswoggle. Post retired on the wrestled on the independent circuit as the world's sexiest midget, Short Stack. He made his debut a few weeks later as the unnamed leprechaun partner of Finley. Named Little Bastard at first on commentary, Post would officially be named Hornswoggle in February of 07.
And he became a McMahon at one point, and because of the whole stuff with Ken Kennedy going up in smoke. And then also he was the Mystery Raw general manager and apparently had a whole village underneath the ring where DX ended up having to go under the ring and do a court case. It's the strange times of Hornswoggle's life underneath a ring.
10 years ago, May 6, 2012, Dustin Runnels, who was producing at the time, was released from the WWE. But of course, don't worry, he'd be back in 2013 Royal Rumble as Goldust in what was going to be a one-shoot deal. However, he would stay on the full-time roster as a wrestler. This would be his fifth run with the company. 6 years ago, May 6, 2016, WWE does some housekeeping, letting go of eight of its roster members. Hornswoggle, Alex Riley, Zeb Kolcher, El Torito, Cameron, Santino Marella, Wade Barrett, and Damian Sandow. May 7th, 1989, the debut of the Dynamic Dudes, Shane Douglas and Johnny Ace, defeated the Samoan SWAT team at WrestleWar 89.
Yeah, that's quite the tag team there, because what Douglas ended up becoming when they were riding around on skateboards and neon colors, but then to know that his tag team partner was John Laurinaitis riding a skateboard, it just doesn't compute for me. Envisioning that, I'd have to go back on the WWE network and see this train wreck. And as we know, he's the stepfather-in-law of Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson, and of course the Bella Twins.
Laurinaitis actually reminded me of Super Dave Osborne.
Yeah.
21 years ago, May 7th, 2001, following a WWF Jacked taping in Uniondale, New York, Perry Saturn was sent home following a match with Mike Bell. Early in the match, after Bell botched a snapmare arm drag, Saturn snapped and threw Bell to the outside where he would be dropped on his head. From there, Saturn was rewarded with a beauty of a storyline, dropping his valet Terry for a mop after a concussion made him all goofy. After he injured his ACL in 2002, he would be released after his contract expired in January of 2003. 20 years ago, May 7, 2002, Scott Hall was released from WWE after a rough 3 months back with the company. He showed up too drunk to perform at Insurrection and the following Raw. And of course, the plane ride from hell didn't sit well with the company as well.
No, it doesn't help.
No. 15 years ago, May 7, 2007, on Raw from Pennsylvania, Edge defeated Mr. Kennedy in just 8 seconds to win Kennedy's WrestleMania 23 Money in the Bank contract. The switch of the Money in the Bank briefcase was due to Kennedy's torn bicep, which turned out to be a hematoma. He would be out for a month. May 8th, 2000, on Nitro, longtime valet and manager Miss Elizabeth wrestles for the first time in her career. She defeats Daphne by DQ in just 32 seconds. The next night, Elizabeth scores her only pinfall win at a Thunder taping in Springfield, Illinois, defeating Rhonda Singh. 20 years ago, May 8th, 2002, In Demand and J Sports and Entertainment announced a joint venture for a new wrestling promotion, NWA's new top affiliate, Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. 20 years ago, May 8th, 2000, another casualty of the plane ride from hell, WWE would release Kurt Hennig after he and Brock Lesnar have a fight on the doomed flight. Ding! By the way, that's tagging in.
Oh, sorry. Ding. My apologies.
That's quite all right.
I've lost my spot. You didn't warn me.
It would be 51 years ago, May 9th, 1971, Tatsumi Fujinami, the future WWE 2015 Hall of Famer and New Japan Pro legend, would debut for the Japan Wrestling Federation at age 17. Oh, Fujinami. Wow, there's more to this story. Fujinami held the IWGP heavyweight title 6 times, a 5-time IWGP tag champ, a WCWA World Heavyweight Champion, NWA World Heavyweight Champion, a WWF Junior Heavyweight Champion, 2-time NWA International Junior Heavyweight Champion, and the winner of the G1 Climax Tournament in 1993.
There we go. So then we'll follow up with the fact that in 47 years ago, on May 9th, 1975, in Tokyo, for the first time, the WWF champion would defend against the Pacific Wrestling Federation champion, pitting Bruno Sammartino against Giant Baba. They fought to a no contest in a title unification match. Shocking. Announce that you're going to reunify the titles, and it doesn't happen. But a lot of that happened a lot when champions went against champions from other organizations.
Yep.
13 years ago on May 9th, Nick Bollea, son of Hulk Hogan, was sentenced to 8 months in prison after pleading no contest to his role in an automobile accident in Clearwater, Florida, in August of 2007 that left his passenger, 22-year-old John Grazino, with eye and brain injuries. He would serve 5.5 months plus 500 hours of community service and no license for 3 years. 41 years ago, on May 10th, 1981, Vern Gagne, at the age of 55, retires from wrestling after defeating Nick Bockwinkel to retain the AWA World Heavyweight Championship. Gagne founded the AWA and held the gold 10 times for a total of 4,677 days. Don't feel bad for Bockwinkel, though. He would be awarded the vacated belt 9 days later. 39 years ago, on May 10th, 1983, while en route to a WWF taping in Allentown, Pennsylvania, Eddie Gilbert gets into an automobile accident and sustains major injuries, including a broken neck. Gilbert would return to the ring and cited his return to the WWE champion with Bob Backlund. But Bob ended up helping Eddie Gilbert get back on his feet. May 10th, 1999, the Mean Street Posse loses a Loser Leaves WWF match against the Stooges, Patterson and Briscoe. 21 years ago, on May 10th, 2001, Vince McMahon announces the closing of the XFL after just one season. Of course, we know that he tried it again, and after yet another single season, shut it down and sold it, actually, to The Rock. Though you never know what would have happened had COVID not struck. Maybe it would have survived.
Yep. And shortly after XFL shut down, I know in London at the Gibraltar Trade Center, a whole bunch of XFL merchandise showed up.
I wish I had known. 27 years ago on May 11th, 1995, at WCW Saturday Night Taping in Atlanta, Macho Man Randy Savage and Stunning Steve Austin would have their only known match against each other. Savage would win the tournament match to advance for the vacated WCW United States Championship. That was when Stunning Steve had hair and was hanging out with Colonel Robert Parker. The hair did not work well for him. No. 18 years ago on May 11th, 2004, John Tenta, also known as I Am Not a Shark, aka Earthquake, announces his retirement via PW Insider and being diagnosed with bladder cancer. His last match was with All Japan Pro, where he first wrestled and started out his career. His last WWF match was in Orlando, Florida, a dark match against a student of his, the Canadian born college football player turned sumo wrestler turned pro wrestler, was told he had just a 20% chance to live. The radiation treatments would prove ineffective, and the cancer would claim his life. Tenta died in his home in Sanford, Florida, on June 7th, 2006, just 2 weeks shy of his 43rd birthday. At the time of his passing, Tenta was survived by his wife, Josie, and 3 children. A lot of people don't realize he was also Golga in his last real run of WWE. Part of the Humanities, because he wasn't as big and noticeable as Earthquake when he returned.
Why it's surprising that after all that weight loss, he got blubber cancer. Oh, bladder. Oh, my mistake.
And I love when my dog starts going off. 14 years ago, May 11th, 2008, WWE announced via press release that Stephanie McMahon had been promoted to Executive Vice President, Talent and Creative Writing. In a separate press release, WWE announced that John Laurinaitis was promoted to Senior Vice President of Talent Relations. 9 years ago, on May 11, 2007, Kenta Kobayashi retires from in-ring competition. His final event, Final Burning at Budokan, was attended by many former colleagues and former Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihito Noda. I probably butchered his name. I apologize.
And no, he was pretty good.
His retirement entrance and introduction can be viewed on YouTube. You'll never see more paper ribbon thrown in the ring at once when he was introduced in the ring with the other wrestlers. 20 years ago, on May 12, 2002, Eric Kloss died of complications from gastric bypass surgery in Cranston, Rhode Island. He was just 22 years old. You may remember him as a 17-year-old kid wannabe wrestler who called himself Mass Transit and lied his way into a match in ECW. Unfortunately, he has to be bladed by, of all people, New Jack. Bad mistake. His lie may have worked if he didn't go against New Jack and the play job. 33 years ago.
He encouraged New Jack to open him up.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. 33 years ago on May 12th, 1989, Roddy Piper returned to the ring after a two-year retirement. He returns to the ring at WWE Host Show in Los Angeles, substituting for Jake the Snake Roberts, and defeated Ted DiBiase. And we got two more here before we move over to birthdays. 25 years ago, May 12th, 1997, on Raw's War, Jerry Lawler introduces Mr. Monday Night Rob Van Dam to the WWE Universe. His debut was a win over newcomer enhancement talent Jeff Hardy. Van Dam wasn't signed to WWE at the time and was competing for ECW, which was an interpromotional feud with the WWF. But of course, we know in hindsight that Vince was actually helping to bankroll Paul Heyman and keep ECW afloat, even though they were in competition with WCW at the time. 11 years ago, on May 12, 2011, Brock Lesnar is pulled from a scheduled bout at UFC 131 against Junior Dos Santos due to coming down with diverticulitis for a second time. This was the second time, as his first came down with the disorder in 2009. Lesnar would return that December at UFC 141, but would lose in the first round to Alistair Overeem. He retired following that match, and he's been back in WWE ever since.
Moving on to good old birthdays. May 6th is a happy 34th birthday for Sherry Crowley, a.k.a. Evie. Crowley was born in Auckland, Germany on May 6, 1988, and is of Samoan and Irish descent. She wrestled under the ring name Evie and appeared for Impact Pro, Shimmer, Shine, and PWA in Australia. She is currently with, or I'm not sure if this is true, this is a year ago and I didn't update it. She is currently with the WWE under ring name Dakota Kai and was one half of the inaugural NXT Women's Tag Team Champions alongside Raquel Gonzalez. Is she still there?
Yeah, unfortunately, she just got released after I did the editing of this whole thing. And so who knows where Dakota Kai or Evie will show up in the future. But she'll only have a 30-day no-compete clause.
Yeah. May 6th is a happy 42nd birthday for Scott Colton, a.k.a. Scotty Goldman, Matt Classic, a.k.a. Colt Cabana. He was just recently on an episode of Young Rock playing the Brooklyn Brawler.
He did a really good job as the Brawler.
Mm-hmm. May 6th, Brian Knobbs turns 58. Also on May 6th, Apollo turns 47, and Piper Niven turns 31.
Couple
dead birthdays. We got on May 7th, Hercules, he would have turned 66, and Owen Hart would have turned 57. And of course, that brings us to Owen Hart. Would you like to do Owen?
Yeah, sure. He's our first spotlight of the day. And Owen James Hart, born May 7th, 1965, unfortunately passed away May 23rd, 1999, and he was only 34 years old. Was a Canadian professional wrestler who worked for several promotions, including Stampede Wrestling, New Japan Pro Wrestling, World Championship Wrestling. I think he only had a few matches there. And the WWF, he never made it to the WWE part of the company. He received most of his success working for Vince in WWF, where he wrestled under both his real name and the ring name, the Blue Blazer. He's a member of the Hart family, obviously, and born in Calgary, Alberta, the youngest of 12 children of Stampede promoter Stu and Helen Hart. Among other accolades, Owen was a one-time USWA Unified World Heavyweight Champion, a two-time WWF Intercontinental Champion, one-time European Champion, and four-time WWF World Tag Team Champion, as well as the 1994 WWF King of the Ring. He had won multiple pay-per-views for the events that Vince ran and was widely regarded as one of the company's best in-ring performers. Of course, probably one of his best matches is opening WrestleMania 10 against Bret Hart, and then, of course, later on in that same year, going against his brother at SummerSlam 94 in the steel cage. So some really great matches when it was almost thought that you would never see brother versus brother happening, and this was a great way of doing it. Now, of course, we did see Hardy versus Hardy, and that didn't work out so well, but Hart versus Hart was a good brother feud. He died May 23rd, 1999, during his entrance from the rafters of Kemper Arena in Kansas City, Missouri. His equipment that lowered him malfunctioned, and he fell to the ring live on pay-per-view at Over the Edge. He was going to go against the Godfather. He was doing the goody two-shoes thing of the Blue Blazer. And because WCW was having Sting lowered from the rafters, WWE decided to do the same thing with this superhero of Owen Hart. And unfortunately, as it said, live on pay-per-view, he somehow unclipped. And basically, if you hear Jimmy Corderas' story, brushed right by Corderas, and he felt almost the wind from Owen's fall, and he probably just snapped his neck there. Jerry Lawler got in the ring, and he was pretty much dead right then and there, but they couldn't announce it until an actual doctor did. We'd end up seeing a huge lawsuit from Martha Hart, a split in the whole Hart family over it, each person taking a side, whether it was on Martha and saying screw the WWF or siding with Vince, knowing it was an accident in a way, and also trying to keep on Vince's good side so they'd still be able to get employment along the way. So definitely put a divide in that family, unfortunately. And to this day, Owen Hart will not be inducted into the WWF Hall of Fame, or WWE Hall of Fame, should I say. And he's in other Hall of Fames. If you look at his Wikipedia page, so many other people have inducted him. And even right now, AEW is working on a tournament, male and female, sponsored by the Owen Hart Foundation. And Martha and Oge and Athena are a part of it, hanging out with Tony Khan. And they're going to crown somebody, both sides, women and men, at All Out later on this month, as the conclusion of this. So it's in a way still able to honor Owen, but you know, some people are bitter that it's not with WWE, and that she's that, and think that Martha is trying to stick it to Vince and everybody that way. So in one respect, the fans are getting what they want by able to honor Owen, but it's through a company that didn't have any connection to Owen Hart at all.
Yeah, a little odd there, but hey, if that's what she wants to do with his memory, then...
Exactly. It's her family, and they have the first right to do whatever. And I get not forgiving Vince right off the bat, even today. What is it? We're almost 13 years later. or no, 23 years later, should I say. And, you know, that's a wound that will never heal because that was her husband and the father of her children. So,
and unfortunately, she's blind to the fact that it was the company that was hired, their fault, because that lawsuit was finally settled a while back, and they found that the company was at fault. So WWE, in the end, they didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. So I get it, and at least there is a way of still honoring Owen, and even if Tony Khan wasn't doing this whole thing with the Owen Hart Foundation, wrestling fans have their memories of Owen, so happy birthday and rest in peace, Owen Hart, the three-time Slammy Award-winning King of Hearts. Woo!
May 7th is a happy 38th birthday today for Kevin Yannick Steen, a.k.a. Kevin Owens. He is just the second performer in WWE history to appear on every pay-per-view in the first year on the roster. The first was The Undertaker. Steen was born in Quebec, Ontario, Canada. He would wrestle under his birth name for many of the indie promotions, starting out at the age of 16. He would wrestle for Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, AAW, ZZW, and his seven-year run in ROH, where he would team with El Generico and be known as Steenerico. His second run with the company, he'd formed Scum, Suffering, Chaos, Ugliness, and Mayhem, with Steve Corino and Jimmy Jacobs. The group would turn heel on Steen, and he would wrestle babyface until he left the company in 2014. He would then sign a deal with the WWE and debut on NXT at TakeOver Our Evolution as Kevin Owens. He would wrestle with a broken nose that night, defeating CJ Parker, and turned heel at the end of the show, attacking Sami Zayn, who had just won the NXT Gold. He would make his way to the WWE main roster and have a great feud with the WWE's top star at the time, John Cena.
And of course, we know that Sami Zayn is El Generico. I think one of the reasons why I kept this a little bit longer profile on him is the fact that he is such a great fan of Owen Hart that his last name is taken from Owen for being Kevin Owens. He named his son Owen after his love for Owen Hart, and the fact that they have the same birthday and both Canadian, you know, it's just awesome. Thankfully, his son doesn't have to end up showing up at a WWE event because he'd be Owen Owens.
Yeah. May 7th, Angelico turns 35. Will Ospreay turns 29. And May 8th is a happy 61st birthday for Kurosuo legend Akira Tau. May 8th sees Tomasa Ciampa turning 37. Truth Martini turns 47. And Lo Shira turns 32.
Io Shirai.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. That sounds better.
We'll get back to more birthdays after this because there's a whole bunch more along with our other spotlight, but we'll do some big events.
All right. 38 years ago, May 6, 1984, World Class Championship Wrestling presented the David Von Erich Memorial Parade of Champions from Texas Stadium. David died while on tour in Japan for about 3 months earlier. 22 years ago, May 6, 2000, WWF presented Insurrection from London, England, UK exclusive event. 33 years ago, on May 7th, 1989, NWA presented Wrestle War 89, Music City Showdown. Check this one out on the WWE Network as it finished second for the best major wrestling card of 1989 from Wrestling Observer Newsletter readers. It was from Nashville Municipal Auditorium with a live performance from the Oak Ridge Boys. Giddy up. 22 years ago, May 7, 2000, WCW presented Slamboree 2000. 16 years ago, May 7, 2006, Ring of Honor debuts in New York City with Manhattan Mayhem from the New Yorker Hotel. 24 years ago, May 9, 1998, WCW presented the Ultimate Video Bash, a WCW-MTV crossover event from MTV Studios in New York City. Only one match would actually occur on the show, as New York City was hammered by rain all weekend, with about the nearly 5 inches. The only match on the show with some viewers left in the stands, Public Enemy defeated High Voltage. High Voltage would represent Will Smith, and Public Enemy would represent LL Cool J. The scheduled 3-hour show was knocked down to 2. What the hell did they do for 2 hours on TV? Well, they pretty much just yacked under a tent with all the rain coming down.
And probably showed some music videos.
Yes, and you can see some of it is up on YouTube. 23 years ago, May 9th, 1999, WCW presented Slammery 99. Though it had more matches, it wasn't even close to as good as that High Voltage Public Enemy match. 37 years ago, May 10th, 1985, WWF taped the first ever episode of Saturday Night's Main Event from the Nassau Coliseum in Uniondale, New York. This would contribute to the wrestling boom of the 80s. The debut show, which was aired one day later, would be the world premiere of Cyndi Lauper's Goonies Are Good Enough.
I love that video. It's a two-parter and featuring a bunch of WWE superstars.
Too bad the song wasn't better. I like Cyndi Lauper, but... 8 years ago, May 10th, 2014, Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling co-presented Global Wars from Toronto. 34 years ago, May 11th, 1988, WWF taped 4 wrestling challenge episodes in Rochester, Minnesota. 31 matches were on the card, with no matches lasting longer than 4 minutes. 26 years ago, May 11th, 1996, AAA presented Triple Mania 4, a Chicago Triple Mania. Oh, I see. Triple Mania 4A. In Chicago. Triple Mania is a series of 3 big shows per year. This would be the only Triple Mania to be held in the USA. 26 years ago, May 11th, 1996, the same day, ECW president, a matter of respect. ECW presented a matter of respect. This would be tapings of ECW Hardcore TV. I'm going to blame it on the color of the type here is like green. 25 years ago, May 11th, 1997, WWF presented In Your House 15, A Cold Day in Hell from the Richmond Coliseum. 14 years ago, May 11th, 2008, TNA presented Sacrifice from Orlando, Florida. 15 years ago, May 12, 2007, Ring of Honor tapes its first ever pay-per-view, Respect is Earned, from the Manhattan Center in New York City. The pay-per-view would air on July 1st. And finally, 10 years ago, May 12, 2012, Ring of Honor presented Border Wars from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, look at some title changes. May 6, 1984, Rock and Soul, which was Rock and Roll, Buck Zumoff, and King Parsons defeated the Super Destroyers, Super Destroyer 1 and Super Destroyer 2. Great creativity in names there. To win the WCCW American Tag Team Championship. Also on that card, Fritz Von Erich, Kevin Von Erich, and Mike Von Erich defeated the Fabulous Freebirds, Buddy Roberts, Michael Hayes, and Terry Gordy to win the WCCW World Six-Man Tag Team Championships. Terry would replace Fritz on the team when the elder Von Erich retired. And speaking of Kerry Von Erich, that card closed out with Kerry Von Erich defeating Ric Flair to win the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. May 6, 2000, the British Bulldog defeated Crash Holly to win the WWF Hardcore Championship. On May 6, 2002, William Regal defeated Spike Dudley by submission in just 36 seconds to win the WWE European Championship. Also on the show, we saw the hardcore belt do a hot potato, switching about six times between Bubba Ray Dudley winning it first, and then he'd lose it to Stevie Richards, only to lose it to Raven, who lost it to Justin Credible, who lost it to Crash Holly, lost it to Trish Stratus, thanks to Molly Holly and Bobcat being the only other women that had the title. And she lost it to Steven Richards, who began the evening as champion. So a whole bunch of title changes going on right there. 13 years ago, on May 6, 2009, New Japan Pro Wrestling Distance in Tokyo, Japan, Manabu Nakashi defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi to win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Once again, sorry for butchering some names. May 7th, 1989, Michael Hayes defeats Lex Luger to win the NWA United States Championship, and Ric Flair defeated Ricky the Dragon Steamboat to win the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. After the match, Ric Flair was attacked by Terry Funk, who gave him a pile driver through a ringside table. 107 years ago, on May 7th, 1915, in Kansas City, Missouri, Stanley Claus Zbyszko defeated Americus to win the World Heavyweight Championship. On May 7th, 2000, Jeff Jarrett defeated David Arquette and Diamond Dallas Page in a triple cage match to win the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. After the match, Mike Awesome attacked Page and threw Canyon off the stage by Awesome from the second cage to the entrance ramp below, breaking it. Who better than Canyon? Nobody.
Nobody.
On May 6, 2006, Samoa Joe defeated Jay Lethal to win the Ring of Honor Pure Championship. 22 years ago, on May 2000, on Raw's War from Uniondale, Chris Benoit defeated Chris Jericho by submission to win the WWF Intercontinental Championship. Triple H was the special guest referee of the match.
King of Kings.
15 years ago, on May 8th, 2007, at SmackDown taping in Pittsburgh, The Undertaker and Batista battled out in a steel cage match for the World Heavyweight Championship. The match would end in a draw when both men hit the floor at the same time. Mark Henry would then attack and bloody up The Undertaker, and Edge came down as the ultimate opportunist to cash in his Money in the Bank contract and beat The Undertaker in 82 seconds to become the new World Heavyweight Championship and champion. The Undertaker would be carried off by the Druids. 34 years ago, on May 9th, 1988, in Memphis, Tennessee, Jerry the King Lawler defeated Curt Hennig in a career versus title match to win the AWA World Heavyweight Championship. And the last one on my slide here is 26 years ago, on May 9th, 1996, in Tennessee, Melina Hokusa defeated Debbie Coombs to win the NWA Women's Championship.
Ding. All right, May 9th, 1999, Raven and Saturn defeated Rey Mysterio Jr. and Billy Kidman and Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit in a triangle match to win the WCW World Tag Team Championship. Rick Steiner defeated Booker T to win the WCW World Television Championship. And Kevin Nash defeated Diamond Dallas Page to win the WCW World Heavyweight Championship belt. And in an interesting bit of trivia, Nash holds the title for 9 weeks, the second longest world title reign in WCW in 1999, behind Hollywood Hogan, who held it for a whole 10 weeks. 22 years ago, May 9th, 2000, at a SmackDown taping, Crash Holly defeated the British Bulldog to win the WWF Hardcore Championship. 23 years ago, May 10th, 1999, on Raw's War from Orlando, Debra is awarded the WWF Women's Championship from Sable by then-Commissioner Shawn Michaels. Debra was in an evening gown match versus Nicole Bass. little vomit. Subbing for the soon-to-be-gone Sable, Bass would quickly strip Deborah down, and Shawn Michaels would declare Deborah the winner, not Bass, because it was the person who got stripped first that would win the title. 7 years ago, May 10th, 2015, at an Impact Wrestling taping, Rockstar Spud wins a gauntlet match for the gold match to win the TNA X Division Championship. Later that night, Rockstar Spud would be the first person to cash in the X Division Championship for a TNA World Heavyweight Championship match, and lose to Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle would be the party pooper. May 11th, 1996, Shane Douglas defeated Too Cold Scorpio to win the ECW World TV belt. May 11, 2008, the Latin American Exchange, hernamed as in Homicide, with Hector Guerrero and Salinas, defeated Team 3D, Brother Ray and Brother Devon, to become the new TNA World Tag Team Championship. This was the finals of a tournament to crown new champions after Kaz and Super Eric were stripped of the belts. On May 12, 2012, wrestling's greatest tag team, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, defeated the Briscoes, Jay Briscoe and Mark Briscoe, in a fight without honor. To win the ROH Tag Team Championship, Kevin Steen defeated Davey Richards to win the ROH World Championship belt. And now on to Monday Night Wars.
Yeah, we're going to look at... May 6th edition of WCW Nitro. It was held on the Ocean Center beach in Daytona, Florida. Dark match saw the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott Steiner, defeat the Public Enemy, Johnny Grunge and Rocco Rock. Another dark match had Harlem Heat defeat the Nasty Boys. That went to a double DQ. Another dark match had Eddie Guerrero defeating Chris Benoit. Then on the main show, we saw Hugh Morris defeat Randy Savage by disqualification in 5 minutes. Dean Malenko defeated Jushin Thunder Liger with Sonny Ono in his corner in 8 minutes and 50 seconds. Sting defeated Lord Steven Regal, who had Jeeves in his corner, in 6 minutes and 13 seconds. The Giant with Jimmy Hart defeated Hacksaw Jim Duggan to retain the WCW World Heavyweight Championship in 3 minutes and 16 seconds. Thanks for your title challenging of Duggan. And that was your main event for the TV show, because there was a dark match afterwards where the Booty Man defeated Disco Inferno.
God, what a terrible match to end the show with. Mind you, I will say I was at a show where they ended the show with the Bushwhackers against Well Done. So, it happened.
Yeah.
Send the fans home. Sorry?
Send the fans home happy.
Oh, yeah. It's like when a lot of bands play someone else's song as their last song they play. It's like, why aren't you playing your own song? I should be humming your song, not someone else's. But hey, over on a taped episode of Raw, the May 6, 1996 edition of Raw is blah, blah, blah. Who cares about that? It came from the Civic Auditorium in Sioux City, Iowa. This broadcast was dedicated to the memory of Ray Stevens, who passed away the previous day. And that's the wrestler Ray Stevens, not the one that sings about squirrels going up your pants in church.
Or the streak.
Or the streak, yes.
Look at that, look at that.
He did a lot of silly songs, but he also did some serious ones. Of course, Everything is Beautiful. Anyways, back to wrestling. Mark Merrow with Sable defeated the 1-2-3 Kid with Ted DiBiase. Davey Boy Smith with Jim Cornette and Diana Smith at ringside defeated Fatu, and that match was over 10 minutes long. Skip and Zip with Sunny defeated Techno Team 2000, which is 9 minutes and 15 seconds. Remind us, who was in Techno Team 2000?
I believe it was a gentleman named Chris Champion as one of them, and the other one was Eric Watts, but they were Trevor and Troy as part of Techno Team 2000.
Excellent.
It's like Eric Watts and the other guy.
And the main event was The Undertaker with Paul Bearer defeating Owen Hart in a little over 9 minutes. Not bad. You only got four matches on there, but not bad. Starting out with Miro and the Kid, and then they built up with Fatu and Davey Boy Smith doing a fairly long match. There's some decent length matches in here versus what was over on Nitro. I mean, yeah, I think you're getting bigger stars, except for, of course, The Undertaker there. But you're getting bigger stars. But the matches probably weren't as good as, except for the Malenko. Actually, there's a couple of good matches, I'm sure, on on Nitro as well, as I see going through the matches. So I think you were on that night. You might have been safe to watch either or.
Yeah, I probably would have been though over on Raw, because you get, as you said, four matches, and each one was almost 10 minutes. So there's not much filler along with your commercial breaks. So yet, I believe at that point they were only still an hour, and hard to believe. And this is what makes me think we were just, I believe, 2 weeks, if not three at most, away from Scott Hall coming through the audience and changing the landscape. And this is what they were presenting before that. It's mm-hmm. like night and day between what we end up getting a couple weeks later with the invasion of Hall and Nash compared to what was on TV just before that.
Well, they got a fresh injection of a storyline that hadn't really been seen over here in North America, at least not on that grand of a scale. So it definitely worked. It worked for both of the companies. And McMahon won because, well, he built the better mousetrap in the end. Some more birthdays. We got May 9th is a happy 55th birthday for Kevin Foote, a.k.a. Kevin Kelly. Born in New York City and a graduate of Florida State University, he would spend 5 years on the indie circuit until June of 96, joining the WWF. He would serve as an interviewer, a commentator, talent evaluator, and was a member of the creative team. Foote would manage and wrestle for Delaware-based East Coast Wrestling Association, winning their heavyweight title in 2001, and he was inducted into their Hall of Fame in 2005. After being released by the WWF, he would work for Major League Wrestling and announce for Lucha Libre, New Japan, and ROH. May 9th would have been the 65th birthday of Mike Shaw, a.k.a. Norman the Lunatic Bastion Booger. He was born in Scandia, Michigan. He began his career as Klondike Mike for NWA All-Star Wrestling in Vancouver. He would wrestle in Stampede Wrestling Calgary and would go to national with World Championship Wrestling in 1989 and 1990 as Norman the Lunatic. Shaw would then move on to the WWF in 93 as Angry Monk Friar Ferguson, which the Catholic Church of New York bitched about. So he was repackaged as the notorious hunchback slob Bastion Booger, who actually reminded me of the pigs, the pig guards in Star Wars Return of the Jedi. I think it's because of what he was wearing. And well, he was a pig, but... his lone pay-per-view appearance came at the 93 Survivor Series, which was voted worst match. He was scheduled to appear in the 94 Royal Rumble match, but he no-showed the event, and it was explained that he overate and got sick. After being released by the WWF, Shaw opened a wrestling school in his hometown of Scandia, Michigan. He would make a one-time return to the WWF on the Raw 15th Anniversary Special in 2007. On September 11, 2010, Shaw died of a heart attack in Marquette, Michigan. He was 53. He would leave behind his wife and two children. He did appear at least once in London, Ontario at the Medway Arena at an event there. I can't remember who else was on the card, but I remember he was there coming out of retirement. And wow, he looked pretty friggin' old.
Yeah.
All right, and more birthdays. Once we get the Bobby Roode, Sean can run down that one. May 10th, Tito Santana turns 69. Ariba. That's better. He's one of my favorites. Always gave you a good match. You knew most times he wasn't going to win, but he was a very talented, or still is a very talented wrestler. May 10th, William Regal turns 54. Billy Kidman turns 48 on May 11th. And joining him is Bobby Roode.
Yeah,
turns 46.
That takes us over to our other spotlight and Bobby Roode. Birthday, May 11th, 1976. So he just turned 46. Born in Peterborough, Ontario. I actually went to school with his cousin and almost got a chance to meet him at a TNA show here in London. Unfortunately, there had been an injury in, I'm not sure if it was him or the match that he was in, and all chaos happened, so that didn't happen. But he was trained by Val Venus and Shane Seawell. Debuted in 1998, worked basically for TNA and WWE only, and NXT, of course. So just a bit about him. Robert Francis Roode is a Canadian performer signed to WWE, where he goes under the name, his real name, Robert Roode. He's known for his 12-year tenure in TNA after debuting for TNA as part of Team Canada in 2004. He won the NWA World Tag Team Championships with Eric Young. Following the team's breakup, he embarked on a singles run before forming a team with James Storm, known as Beer Money Inc. Together with Storm, he is a six-time TNA World Tag Team Champion. They are the longest reigning champions in TNA history. Roode eventually became a two-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion, with his first reign being the longest reign in the company's history at 256 days. In his later years with the company, Roode also won the tag team titles with Austin Aries and was a one-time TNA King of the Mountain champion. In 2016, he began his career in WWE, starting with NXT. He was one-time NXT champion prior to his main roster call-up. Roode debuted on SmackDown in August 2017, winning the United States Championship in January of 2018, his first championship on the main roster. And he won the Raw Tag Team titles with Chad Gable in December. And since 2019, he's held the 24/7 championship once and the Raw and SmackDown Tag Team titles with partner Dolph Ziggler as the Dirty Dogs each one time. So, yeah, a lot of things going on for him. All those titles that were mentioned. Border City Wrestling down in Windsor. He held the championship there and the tag team titles. He worked for Real Action Wrestling and is a four-time champion there. I mentioned the TNA and WWE stuff. He's a one-time Universal Wrestling Alliance champion for the tag teams, two times for their main title. And PWI ranked him the best tag team of the year with Beer Money in 2008 and 11, and ranked him number two PWI 500 in 2012. So that's a huge accomplishment, being that close to being the number one wrestler of the year in 2012. To even crack the top 10 for the PWI 500 is a huge accomplishment in itself. So that is Bobby Roode. Probably deserves a little bit more than what he's getting in WWE, but with his age, he's definitely somebody they're able to keep around as a person for them to, the new generation, to learn from. So, yeah. That's our superstar spotlight on our other Canadian, Bobby Roode.
May 11th sees Daisy Hayes, who turns 39. Also on the 11th, Kato, or Max Moon, Paul Diamond, turns 61.
Another Canadian and, there.
Sorry?
Another Canadian there from
I didn't know he was Canadian. I seen Max Moon. I'm not sure if it was him or the other guy. I'm thinking it was him, but
yeah, because Conan was the original Max Moon.
Yes. Lince Dorado turns 35. On May 12th, Doug Basham, one half of the Basham brothers, turns 51. Also on the 12th, Ricky Ortiz turns 47, Kushida turns 39, and James Dudley would have turned 112. And that is it for this week in wrestling history. Of course, it's all compiled from the vast land of Google, Wikipedia, CapesideSeats.com, and most importantly, from fans and journalists that had front row seats to history. And as always, a big thank you to our sponsor, CoolBet, CoolBet.com, and sportsbook betting in casino games. Stay cool and bet responsibly. And of course, Hammerlock Pure Wrestling, bringing back the golden age of pro wrestling. And Sean can tell you about this Saturday, May 14th.
That's right. This Saturday, May 14th, we are at the Saxonia Hall in Elmer, Ontario. Tickets are just $20. Doors open at 6 p.m. Bell time, 7 p.m. We are bringing back the golden age of pro wrestling. We are sponsored by the Rusty Wrench, Domino's Pizza, Hammerlock Apparel, and you can go to hammerlockapparel.com to get your tickets for this amazing event. And as I said before, I'm doing my in-ring debut doing the ring announcing. We'll see how that goes and if that job sticks or if I'm back to running music and a bell. But yeah, it's going to be a fun evening either way. And I know I'm going to do okay. So,
oh, absolutely. You do okay. You might have, you know, the worst thing is you might, have to belch or fart in the ring, and you just got to decide whether or not you're just going to let it go or not.
Go with the flow.
That's right.
See what happens. But yeah, so it's going to be a great night. And I definitely encourage everybody to join us at Hammerlock Pure Wrestling, May 14th, Elmer, Ontario. $20. You can't go wrong. Yes, it's going to be a great day weather-wise down in southwestern Ontario. But after spending your afternoon outside, come on inside and get entertained as sun goes down, and then you can hit the patio right after. So we'll take 2 hours of your time and give you your money's worth and more. So we'll see you this Saturday in Elmer. But until then, I'm working on the next list, and there's a lot more birthdays than what we even had this week. So we'll see what that comes about and who's going to jump into our spotlight. And we wish you all a great day, evening, wherever it is. Stay good.